Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the GovCon world, this podcast is for you. Today we're talking about the CARES Act, and this episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Here's Skyway community member Jessica Rockhill from the Rockhill Group.
Skyway gives us the confidence and teaches us all at the same time because we don't always know what's coming, but they do. And just knowing that they have our back, we trust that they're going to lead us in the right direction, and that builds our confidence more than anything.
Personal memberships in the Skyway community start at just $20 a month. Check out skywaymember.com to learn more. All right, let's get started with today's episode. We will get back to doing our more traditional contracting officer podcast content in the near future, we hope. For now, we're still doing our best to be topical and timely with current events. So again, talking about coronavirus, COVID-19 related issues, we hope to release some non-virus related podcasts soon just to give people a break, because this will pass and we will be back to whatever normal government business is in the future. It's not going to be whatever normal was before, but it is going to be normal. It's going to be the new normal. And so it's important to keep talking about other topics that are going to matter more in the future. But right now, back to virus-related topics.
Yeah, I thought we were past. I thought this was a good week to take a break. But as it turns out, with the CARES Act, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act being signed, you know, a whopping, 4 days ago, I have to say, I've never found myself digging through scouring through an actual law before. For this podcast, in this case, I was, because so much of what we talk about is usually in the FAR. You know, it comes out of law and then ends up in the FAR by the time we apply it. But in this case, we're looking at the actual law. We're going a lot further upstream than we normally do. This stuff is hot off the press. Like I said, 4 days ago,
as of when we're recording.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, fair enough.
Not when people are listening to it.
Yes.
Maybe.
The reason it's worth talking about now is this may never get in the FAR. The language that's in this law is so esoteric to what's going on right now. By the time it gets into the FAR, it won't look like it does right now. And
esoteric to what's going on right now? That's a
big word. Specific to. Is unique.
Specific.
To,
that's probably better.
It's unique to what's
going on. But it's very esoteric type information. Yeah.
Yes. Very. Yes. Well, a lot of the stuff we do is esoteric, I suppose.
That's a big word anyway. We shouldn't use such big words on the podcast.
That one's going to be banned, just like some of the other words that I used to use. So anyway, the CARES Act, okay, was signed into law, like we said, March 28th. I'll just say that. March 28th, 2020. It's got some language that gives the potential to support contractors and by extension, their employees who are impacted by facility closures and other restrictions as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. So there's a lot of stuff in here that is not clearly defined, and we're going to at least lay out some of it.
Yeah, we're going to stay away from the details of the law, and we're going to talk about why it's important to document everything you're doing, because the details are a bit hazy as of today. Before we do that, let's stop and say thanks.
Thanks this week goes to Kimberly Sullivan from Dynamic Integrated Services. DIS is an information technology and management consulting firm in Falls Church, Virginia. I want to thank Kimberly for being an engaged podcast listener, as well as an active Skyway community member. The Skyway community members like Kimberly are the reason that we can do podcasts like episodes like this for free week after week.
Thanks, Kimberly. All right. As you mentioned, the CARES Act is now law. There's a specific section, section 3610, that has some language that is really interesting to us contracts folks, because this isn't the kind of thing that happens very often, but it says, I'm not going to read a whole lot here. It's legal language. Notwithstanding any other provision of law and subject to the availability of appropriations, funds made available to an agency by this act or any other act may be used by such agency to modify the terms and conditions of a contract or other agreement without consideration to reimburse. And that's where it gets
legalese.
Yeah, this is where it gets really heavy, but to reimburse contractors for hours where they're not working. If you're not able to work because of some virus-related closure restriction, you may be able to be paid for not working through your current contract. And that is a big deal.
And the foot stomp there is may. I mean, that's the biggest thing that you want to make sure we read in this law, is that the act may be used for the agency to modify the terms of their contract. So right out of the gate, doesn't say that they have to do it. It isn't an immediate Band-Aid. It's an option for a Band-Aid. And then what makes it an option is the interpretation that's going to happen over the next couple of months and years, and the importance of documenting everything you're doing is to see whether you fit in them. Maybe they got it or maybe they didn't file.
Yeah. In the course of two or three sentences in this law, there are more ambiguities than I could even imagine. There's so many words that need farther definition. Despite that, like you just said, even if all of this is clarified and you qualify to be paid for not working because of closures, the agency still is only under the guidance of may be used. They don't have to do this. Saying that, I think most will.
One of the other big things in here is that it says funds may be used to modify the conditions of a contract without consideration. And that's a big change, because a lot of what we've been saying, myself included, the old days, 2 weeks ago in March, I was saying that if you have people that can't work, you're going to need to give the contracting officer something you can trade in exchange for them not working, like something of like value. And what this is saying is, no, you can get paid without consideration. Now, there's a thousand variables to that. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that is a big difference. And you mentioned that there's a part of the FAR, there was FAR Part 50. When you and I talked about the emergency acquisition stuff, I think it was episode 281, we talked about getting an award or getting a change to a contract without consideration. Right here it is, right in the law. And it's not something that, well, I've seen, let alone something that you see very often.
Yeah. And it still says may.
Yeah, exactly.
That may applies to amount without consideration too. They may ask for consideration. Probably not. In this case, in these extreme circumstances, people generally play nice. You're trying to do the right thing, and that the best in people generally comes out in these types of situations. But there's so much ambiguity in this act that it's going to take a while for it to settle. Just one example. It says a contractor may be reimbursed for the cost of keeping certain employees in a ready state. I'm paraphrasing that, except for in a ready state. What does in a ready state mean? Not sure yet, but that will be defined, and it may be defined differently by each agency or even each contract, depending on the contract circumstances. What we're trying to get across in this episode is now is the time to document everything.
Yeah, having the understanding that you're supposed to be documenting how you define to be a ready state. If you're just doing that, okay, at least you're in the right direction. I think it's going to be contract specific.
Those four words, in a ready state, like you're describing, could be interpreted so many different ways. The important thing is document every hour people are working or not working and why. And when the definition for in a ready state is finally flowed down and understood agency by agency, contract by contract, you'll be able to then assign all of the different reasons, the different types of reasons why people have not worked or where they worked or why they worked. You'll be able to assign them into the right buckets. If you don't keep track of that now, if you just have charge code for working and charge code for time off, it'll be very difficult in the future to say, well, these are time off hours that I should be paid for because it was in a ready state, and these are time off hours that were for other reasons.
Remember that in the event this concept is going to apply to your contract, not today or even in the next couple of weeks, but if the contracting officer of the agency decides to pay you to keep people in ready state, whatever that decides to be, it's probably going to be a modification. Okay. There's going to be changes to how the contract is managed based on how this law is interpreted. So expect there's going to be some additional work.
Yeah. Some agencies may use mass modifications. They may create a COVID-19 time charging guidance clause and do one modification that inserts that clause in a unilateral manner into every single contract that the agency's issued. GSA is renowned for doing this, that instead of doing thousands and thousands of administrative mods, they do a mass mod that affects everybody at once. It's a very efficient way to make changes like that.
Another reason to document, it's going to take years for this to shake out from a cost accounting perspective, and there'll probably be new codes. Like, for example, if there is a COVID-19 charge code application guide or something. You got to be ready for that. And so understand this is not something that's going to clean up overnight. The more you document all the ways that this impacts you, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah, settling indirect rates, I think that's what you're saying. Yes. Down the road, when you're trying to close out contracts, it may be that some costs are allowable, some aren't. Just more charge codes is better at this point. Meaning, you might need to have your regular I'm working code. You might need to have a code for I can't work because I'm at home caring for a child whose school is closed. A different code for I can't work because my government office is closed and I'm not allowed to go in. It may be I can't work because I'm caring for a sick family member who has COVID-19. It may be I can't work because I actually have COVID-19 myself. All of those
and more
may need to be tracked separately because they may be handled separately, not only from a payment from the government standpoint, but from a benefits standpoint, which is something way out of the scope of me and you, Kevin.
Correct. Yeah,
employment law is a completely different mess. Regardless, all that I just talked about is creating a ton of work for contracting officers, for everyone in the government side, and for everyone on the contractor side. People in the human resources and accounting departments, the billing departments at government contractors are working round the clock right now, trying to understand all this information that's coming out, how it impacts their employers so that they can keep their companies operating.
And this additional work, which wasn't planned for even a couple months ago, it's going to impact the overall speed and the other programs that were in process before COVID-19, because these are all, think of them as, this sounds kind of harsh, but these are non-value-added exercises to the mission. Managing contracts, right, and adding new charge codes, all that kind of stuff wasn't budgeted into the time that everybody was going to spend managing the contracts. So don't be surprised if the workload increases, but the efficiency with stuff gets done actually slows down for a while. And that's all part of this law being implemented.
We haven't even talked about how it impacts subcontractors yet. We start out by saying one provision of this, of the CARES Act, is that contractors may be able to be paid by the government for hours not worked. Well, what about subs? Kind of assume that they meant that subs get that benefit flowed down from their prime contractors, but it's not specific. And how that works is going to have to be figured out more specifically.
I can't imagine that Congress was stressing over including subcontracting arrangements in this overall plan. Remember, this was a 335-page bill that was cranked out in like a week. Most bills are, in the thousands of pages and take months to get done. So there's a lot of stuff that they didn't contemplate. I suspect I don't want to project, but the application of subcontracting will be defined by somebody at some point, but that point's not yet. But as a subcontractor, document. Same rules apply document to you for the same reason. Right.
In every podcast, we talk about acquisition time zones and execution time zones. When this occurs in the GovCon world, we're talking solely execution time zones here. This is existing contracts. What's happening? What's going on right now? It's applicable across every part of the execution time zones, but critically in the performance zone, which is where we are right now. Communicate, document everything.
And if you're not familiar with the execution time zones overall, they're in episode number 84.
Good plug. Specifically on the government side, why are government people interested? Why do they care about documentation?
This law is a great start. It provides the intent to pay people who are blocked from working, but it's not really specific enough or nowhere near specific enough at this point. In theory, the funding is already on contract, right? I mean, this is work that was supposed to get done, so they can pay you to not work with the funding they have. So it shouldn't require new funds. However, it will require the government to modify contracts to account for the work that's not getting done, and people are still getting paid. And at some point, more money will be required to, again, get the work done that didn't get done because you were getting paid to not do it. So yeah, this is going to roll on for a while.
Yeah. Government folks, communicate with your contractors as soon as you can that you're going to need detailed documentation of why, how, where people aren't working, right? The sooner you ask for it, the sooner you can provide details, the better. But I understand that government folks don't understand exactly what information is going to be needed either. Even if you don't know exactly what you'll need, tell them what you do know, tell them what you expect and tell them maybe they want to document even more than you're expecting right now.
There you go. Yeah, it's setting expectations is probably the best way to lay this out.
In the last open forum in the Skyway community about COVID-19 issues, we mentioned that contractors should just assume they're going to need all the details in the world. So create new job codes for everything you can think of. Worst case, you'll have to roll some of those job codes up to a higher level. But best case, you'll have the details available and easily reportable and sortable when you need them.
And if you're a Skyway community member, those open forums are recorded and they're on the COVID-19 page inside the community.
So I sort of switched to the industry side since we're talking about contractors documenting everything and job codes. This law was sort of a blunt force solution. Given the circumstances, it's very important that it was passed very quickly. So they didn't have time to work out all the elegant details that will be worked out over time of how it's supposed to work.
For now, be sure you know which parts apply to you. Again, I mean, in full disclosure, we're not lawyers, right? So we're kind of interpreting what we have so far. But before making any, we'll call them unrecoverable decisions based on interpretations that we're making, we recommend digging into the actual law. And yes, we don't, actually, I don't think we ever recommend talking to lawyers, but in this case, we do. Talk to your lawyer. Employment law is a great example of why you should talk to your lawyer and get the CO's viewpoint. Yeah, sometimes getting the CO's viewpoint is going to give you a litmus test at this point. They can tell you kind of what's the overall direction. Maybe they're getting direction from their agency that hasn't flowed out to the public yet. But either way, give the CO your own reasonable viewpoint and see if they agree. Because if you think that having two charge codes is enough and they say, yeah, that's not what I'm hearing. And likewise, contracting officers, make sure you're passing on what you're hearing. Because otherwise, industry is going to feel like they're in the dark.
Yeah, document everything, industry folks, especially your mitigation efforts. If you're trying to allow people to work remotely and you couldn't because some situation blocked it, document what was happening and why you could or couldn't. Because at some point, they may give you credit for at least trying to work remotely.
And that's a critical part of again, we're not in the job of interpreting this law, but think about it from a common sense perspective. Is they want to have some proof that you at least tried to work remote. You tried to get the work done despite the fact that you couldn't get into the building. You can't just throw up your hands and say, well, the base is closed, so we didn't have to work. That's not going to go very well long-term. So yeah, document your mitigation efforts. That's a good strategy.
Right. Right now, a lot of states have stay-at-home orders, and that's different than a quarantine. A lot of the laws and the rules speak specifically to quarantines where you're legally not allowed to go anywhere. Stay-at-home orders are a little bit different. They might not apply. Again, lots of nuances. Document what you're doing and why so that later on, if there's a chance that you can get some credit for doing it or trying to do it, that you have the documentation. If you're a subcontractor, I mentioned before that the law is not really specific about subs, but talk to your prime contractor or contractors as soon as you can and get their direction on it. It can and will vary from prime contractor to prime contractor, and even from contract to contract with the same prime contractor. They could be getting different direction from different agencies, from different contracting officers. Make sure that you are communicating with your primes. Likewise, primes, make sure you're flowing information to your subs as soon as you have any clarity at all in this murky situation.
And realize that no one at this point has total clarity. So like that, right. I think that's part of the balance here is you can't just spam everybody with every piece of information you get. And that the difference between information and communication is communication has some context to it. So if you get some context, that's what you pass to your subs and likewise. So that'd be my biggest recommendation is let's just not turn this into a spam machine. We're not just sending each other all the conjecture we can find. I think there's plenty of that going around already.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue that the CARES Act is a model of clarity, nor is it supposed to be. Right?
Correct.
It was, we need to do something, let's do something quickly. And it is imperfect in many, many ways, but it was important to flow down some relief and get some rules out as soon as possible. It will be cleared up. Over time, all the details will become clear. You'll get direction. In the meantime, document document.
So the ironic part of this is that we talk about, you know, Congress can't get stuff done quickly. Well, this is kind of what we get when they get stuff done quickly. And sometimes it makes sense, but we understand that there's a lot of holes in what we get when they throw it at us that quickly. So we have to be careful what we wish for.
Yeah, it's just like a request for proposal, like we talk about. The time spent up front making it clear saves you a whole lot of time later explaining what you meant. And in this case, they had to get it out quickly, and we're going to spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out what it all means later on. The intent is clear, but the execution is murky. All right.
It's like Congress did a letter contract, and then we have to definitize it over the next couple of years.
Great.
That's a blog post. Oh, I'm going to pull that string later. Okay, move on.
Yeah, that thought just tires me out. Exactly. Let's end this one. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
All right, I'll see you, Paul.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast, we invite you to check out the Skyway community. The Skyway community is the ultimate resource for anyone at any stage of starting, growing, or running a business in the GovCon world. Personal memberships start at just $20 a month, give you access to all of our training resources. Professional members get access to Skyway's team of contracting officers, and premium members also have custom consulting hours built right into their membership. Visit skywaymember.com to learn more. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next week.